Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 167 of Her, the podcast, where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her secrets to weight loss. Yeah, we have a terrific show coming up, but before we begin, know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins. The delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on to iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. We look forward to hearing from you, so come on down with that rate and review. All right? Okay, it's time for her.
The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
Well, oh my goodness gracious. We have our wonderful friend, Chef AJ, back. Yeah, man. This is all about learning about her new book. It's The Secrets to Ultimate Weight Loss. And you know what's really wonderful about AJ is she literally walks the talk. And you're going to be hearing about her personal story as well as some of this new science and the recipes and how she puts it all together. She's been devoted to a plant-based diet for almost 40 years. You're not that old, are you, AJ? Come on, give me a break. She's a host of the television series Healthy Living with Chef AJ, which airs on Foodie TV. And she's been all over the media. You've probably seen her, heard of her, and also potentially, you know, read her other books like Unprocessed, How to Achieve Vibrant Health and Your Ideal Weight. She's been all over the place, Right, Chef AJ?
Absolutely.
All right. Oh, big deep breath. So here I have this fantastic new book in front of me. It's The Secrets to Ultimate Weight Loss, a revolutionary approach to conquer cravings, overcome food addiction, and lose weight without going hungry. That's a whole mouthful there. So, AJ. Well, start with your journey. You know, chapter one is all about my journey. You know, when people like yourself put it out there, I think one of the things that people want to know is, do you have street creds? You know, are you someone who's suffered?
I have suffered, and I don't have I don't have a medical degree, but I do have, you know, I did attend the School of Hard Knocks. And so I was born to a morbidly obese mother, which, as you know, increases your chance of obesity. But that's a genetic component. That's not the reason that I, you know, stayed overweight or obese. But by the age of five, I was already fat. Now, we're talking 1965, Dr. Peek, when there weren't as many fat kids, you know. Back then, there was one fat kid in every grade of 40 kids, and that was me up until high school. So, you know, I was tortured, and it was very hard being the only fat kid back then in the 60s. By the age of 11, I weighed 160 pounds. And when you're not yet 5 feet tall, that is obese. So it was very, very hard, you know. And then in my 20s, I got up to almost 200 pounds. I had a bout with anorexia followed by bulimia, and I just couldn't figure out what to do until my 50s. And a lot of it came from a friend and colleague, a mutual friend and colleague of ours that I learned a lot of this from, was Dr. John McDougall. We both had the privilege of speaking at his conferences. And so when I finally learned the secrets to ultimate weight loss, which really aren't a secret because they've been around forever, but for whatever reason, I was not exposed to them, I was finally able to lose weight, honestly, easily, effortlessly, and the main thing was without going hungry. There was no weighing and measuring or counting calories or carbs or points. It was really about eating the healthiest and most nutritious foods on the planet and either avoiding, eliminating, or decreasing the ones that weren't so healthy. And it's really based on a principle that you've probably heard of called calorie density. It's been around as long as food's been around, but so the person that really brought it into the forefront was a researcher at Penn State University named Dr. Barbara Rolls, who wrote a series of books called Volumetrics, and I basically just took her work, what I learned, but then added my own take on what I feel is food addiction that makes it so hard for so many people because of some of these refined foods like the sugars and flours and alcohols, which are not only of a high caloric density, but for many of us, are addictive, and if we're including any amount of addictive foods in our diet, it's going to be pretty hard to meet our health and weight goals.
All right. So go back again to your own personal story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell us about your family. Did you grow up, well, you know, in a culture in your family where obesity was where it was at?
Absolutely. I remember as a young child, my great-grandmother having her leg amputated because of type 2 diabetes. And just, we were just taught that this was normal. This was the vagaries of old age. Everybody in my family had either heart disease, cancer, or diabetes, died far too young from the complications of one of these diseases. And we were told it was genetic. There was nothing we could do about it. It was the vagaries of old age. I was raised Jewish, and that's some of the worst food you can eat. It's almost as bad as the standard American diet. You know, it may be kosher, but it's just as bad. You know, high-fat chopped liver and chicken schmaltz and corned beef and all those kind of foods and white bagels, things like that, and cream cheese. So I was not raised on a health-promoting diet whatsoever. And I did become vegan at 17. This was for ethical reasons. But it really didn't do anything to improve my health or my weight because I was what they call a junk food vegan for the first 26 years, having lots of French fries, potato chips, and Coke Slurpees. You know, you can be vegan and be fat, because I was, and be very, very unhealthy. So I didn't have health models for me. You know, nobody in my family exercised, and nobody ate a health-promoting diet. And it really was, you know, I had to learn this all myself, later in life. And thankfully, I did.
Excellent. Okay, so in other words, you know, you harbor the gene, there's no question,
right.
That, you know, you struggled, you were all over the map, everything from eating disorders to, you know, significant obesity, which sort of gets filed under there too. And, you know, eventually over time, you learned enough about alternative ways of dealing with this, and you tend to go to the plant-based place.
I do.
What sold you on the plant-based place?
Well, as luck would have it for weight loss, it really worked very well because the foods that are highest in nutrient density are the like fruits and the vegetables, and they're also lowest in caloric density. So even if somebody didn't want to be plant-based, I would suggest to them if they want to achieve better health and weight loss, go more plant-based and make sure that half their plate is full of fruits and vegetables because these are the most calorically diluted foods on the planet. You can freely eat them. You don't have to worry about measuring or weighing them because they're so low in caloric density. They're mostly fiber and water, and that's where we get all our nutrients. So even in my first book on process, I always recommended to people to eat more fruits and vegetables and less animal products and processed food because right now in this country, Americans are eating something like 92% of their calories from animal products and processed food and less than 10% from fruits and vegetables. And I was guilty of that as well. Until the age of 43, I didn't eat any fruits and vegetables. And therefore, I got up to be almost 200 pounds and also developed the beginning of colon cancer because even though I was vegan, I wasn't eating any fiber. And without fiber, you're not going to be very, very healthy. You're certainly, you know, not going to be satisfied. So plants are amazing because they have all the phytonutrients and phytochemicals and antioxidants and, you know, fiber and water, which you just don't have in animal products or processed foods. And even if somebody wanted to eat animal products, I still would probably recommend that they either limit or eliminate processed foods, like all the junk food, the foods in the cans, the boxes and bottles and bags, because they don't have nutrients, they don't have fiber, they're of a very high caloric density. And for most of us, because of their high content of sugar, fat, and salt, they can be pretty addictive.
I see. All right. So now we're looking at the secrets to ultimate weight loss revealed. Now, you talk about the 7 C's to success. What are those?
Right. Well, I think the first one is to make the commitment, because I think until you commit, you always are going to have one foot in and one foot out. So I think making a commitment, to at least, you know, attempting to do a more health-promoting diet or lifestyle is the first thing you might want to consider. And I think a lot of times if people make that commitment public, like through a group kind of program like mine, the Ultimate Weight Loss Program, or any kind of group that they have on Facebook, it often can help them reach their goals because they're being accountable, they're getting support, because support can be really, really helpful when you're trying to affect dietary or lifestyle change. And so that's why I think making a commitment is important. You know, it's like when you get married, what is marriage ceremony? It's a commitment that you're going to, love, honor, whatever your vows are. You know, it's not, you don't just say, well, you know, until somebody better comes along. So I think when you make a commitment, it solidifies that you're going to do it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Let's just go through the C's. Let's just dive into
it. Absolutely. Okay, I'm not sure I have them in order, but one of them, after commitment, I would say, I love this word compliance. And I learned that from one of my mentors, Dr. Alan Goldhammer at the True North Health Center, because so many people beat themselves up, especially women, if they, quote, fail. And I don't like that word fail, but they'll say, you know, Chef AJ, I was so good, I ate some kale today, or I was so bad, I ate a cookie. And I don't like to look at things as good or bad, because then you start thinking of yourself as good and bad. I like to look at things as compliant or non-compliant, because there's not a lot of emotion, at least to me, tied with the word compliance. Compliance just means following a prescribed course of action. If you prescribe some medication to your patient and they take it, they're compliant. If they didn't, they're not compliant. They're not a bad person or a good person. And so the more you are compliant with whatever dietary lifestyle change you're trying to make, the more days of compliance you can string together, the more likely you are to going to have success. And so I really like that word. Some people actually prefer the word adherence to compliance, but, you know, we're trying to have everything start with C so that we can remember it. And so compliance is really important. You do need a certain level of compliance. You know, if you just eat, you know, if you just have some vegetables every Thursday, you're probably not going to reach the goals that you want. So after commitment and compliance, one of my C's is consistency. And, you know, the thing that's great about consistency, and you know this because I know I follow you on Facebook and all your wonderful posts about exercise, it can be really hard to start an exercise program, but if you just push yourself to keep doing it, whether you feel like it or not, you become consistent. And when you do things consistently, they actually become a habit. And you can actually look forward to them and enjoy them. And then at a certain point, they become what we call an automatic habit. But that only starts with doing things consistently. And if you look at all the people in life you admire, whether it's an athlete like Kobe Bryant or a musician like Itzhak Perlman, they practice their craft consistently. They don't do it once in a while. They do it every day for multiple hours a day. And so you really do need to be consistent on whatever plan you want. And I think that's what happens. A lot of people flip-flop and they don't, you know, stick to any plan consistently to ingrain that habit. And I think the fourth C is cooking. And, you know, nowadays it's funny how so many people just don't even know the basics. I had a 44-year-old woman come to me for a consultation and she honestly didn't know how to cook a sweet potato at all. Like, she didn't even know how to use a microwave. And so I'm not saying people have to go to culinary school or go to the Cordon Bleu, but just to have some basic cooking skills, which you can get at a community college or an online course, just so that you can do some batch cooking. Because if you can make it so that healthy food is the default, so that when you come home from work after a hard day, that your refrigerator is only filled with healthy choices, you're going to be more likely to eat it. So learning to batch cook things like grains and beans and sweet potatoes, and just to make sure that your pantry is well stocked, that's very important, I think, to success, is to have some just rudimentary cooking skills. And if you can't or won't, then you're going to probably want to maybe hire somebody, be a college student at a reasonable cost, to come in and do this for you. And now we're having more and more of these healthy home food delivery services, so for people that just really don't want to cook at all. But also there's machines now, like the Instant Pot electric pressure cooker and the air fryer, that can really make healthy food in, you know, 10 to 30 minutes.
I'm going to back up here for a second, because mm-hmm. I think that this whole issue of cook has almost become a four-letter word, right? So what you now have is a whole generation that considers cooking microwaving.
Oh, I know.
You know, what's also important to understand is that many, you know, this is, I think, a generational gig. Whereas a lot of people learned how to be able to cook from their parents, primarily right. from mom, but, you know, dad was probably in there too somewhere, so that you had at least some baseline skills. But now you have moms and dads who aren't even there most of the time because they're working, they're, you know, basically they have their own lives in many respects. So you don't have someone there to really kind of, you know, engage you. Which I find to be really troublesome and of great concern, because then you're going to raise a generation that doesn't even know how to tell their own kids what's going on. It just sort of gets worse and worse. Now, right. I could be wrong, but there does also seem to be a generation out there, perhaps the millennials, maybe the people younger than they are, Gen Z or whatever they're called these days, who really seem to be embracing more of a plant-based approach, as well as asking a lot of questions about GMOs and other things like this, with regard to food, and are becoming much more engaged in the sort of the cycle of everything from planting something to harvesting something to eating it and then starting all over again, sort of that circle of life thing. Now, again, I have no statistics in front of me, and I could be out of my mind. Tell me otherwise here. But I think that there might be some traction there. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you that the people today, or at least the younger kids, most of them don't seem to have a lot of interest in cooking. And you mentioned about how they can microwave, you know, their Eggo or their Pop-Tart. And I could actually suggest that there are healthy meals that you could microwave, you know, for example, a potato or a sweet potato with a can of corn or beans to fill it up, or even microwave vegetables if they really only wanted to use a microwave. But, like, I think if they would get this tool called the Instant Pot or any pressure cooker, you could have the most rudimentary cooking skills and follow my easy recipes in the book and literally just throw a bunch of stuff in and push a button and have a healthy meal. It's like the fast food generation. That's what we've raised. And how to get people back to wanting to do this is hard because, like you say, they don't sit down with their families even for a meal anymore, you know?
Right. And so I just see cooking is way more than some technical thing. What I see it instead is something that involves a whole relationship with food. Now, you came from the wonderful world of, you know, eating disorders, everything else. Now, you know as well as I do, so many people out there have a really conflicted relationship with food, especially if they've had really funky experiences like eating disorders, et cetera. Which means that, and when I say eating disorders, the binging is by far the biggest percentage of the entire disordered eating spectrum is binging. And so who doesn't binge? I mean, you don't get to be 200 pounds by not binging. I mean, there's got to be something in there. And then you know, define binging any way you want to. You know, it's just basically overeating to whatever degree. But I have found that there are a lot of people who don't want to cook, don't even want to really shop very much for food because they're terrified of having food in their home because they know they're going to overeat. What do you do with people like that?
Well, I'm guessing that maybe some type of therapy could help them. But I think that if they learn to eat the right foods, the foods like you talked about in your book about bingeables, if you don't have bingeables in your house, then it's going to be far less likely that you're going to binge. Now, I'm sure there's people that are outliers, but most people don't binge on vegetables that I know of. So if you have only healthy food that are not bingeables in your house, I think it makes it a lot easier. And I can understand about how people not wanting to shop, especially because grocery stores can be a huge trigger with all the crap that they have. But now even Whole Foods delivers. You can get an app on your iPhone called Instant Cart, and within a couple of hours, pretty much every grocery store will deliver food to you. You could shop at Farmer's Market. Most people have local ones where you're not going to see the preponderance of crap that you will see like at the grocery store with the bakery and all those other foods. So that those would be suggestions that I would make for people that have trouble with food and to find some way, whether it's through a group or a therapist, to find peace with food, because I do think it's possible. You know, I haven't binged in many years, but the kind of food I eat now, you know, I've always been taught, at least by the doctors that I've seen, that binging is always a result of some kind of restriction. People in third world countries that don't have enough to eat, they don't binge. And so when you follow the principles of calorie density and you're actually full and satiated because you're not restricting your portions or calories, I think that can dial down a lot of the binging behavior because you're full. You know, when you eat huge salads and huge amounts of vegetables and fruits and whole grains and legumes, you're going to feel full. It's going to be very hard to binge. But when you eat processed foods like sugar and flour and all those kind of treats, you just don't get full. You never get satiated.
Amazing. I love it. This is, you know, the key thing is just to openly acknowledge the fact that this is tough for a lot of people. And, you know, I approach the cooking thing with people like this very, you know, carefully, just simple things. I try to keep it, you know, just like you do in your wonderful books. Keep it as simple as possible. Let them build a foundation. There should be no shame, blame, or guilt that you don't know how to cook, that you just start somewhere and you let it rock. You never know what's going to happen one way or the other. All right, so the cooking thing, wow, that one's a loaded one. All right, let's move on to the next C.
The next one is change, you know, being willing to change. You know, there's an old saying, nobody likes change except for a wet baby. And the thing is many people will only change when the pain associated with change becomes less than the pain of staying the same. So I always tell people just be willing to change. You know, to really adapt a healthy lifestyle, you have to change what you're eating first and foremost, how you shop, how you cook, if you cook. Sometimes you have to change the friends you're hanging out with. You know, when people are trying to recover from alcoholism, it's probably not a good idea when they get out of rehab to hang around their unhealthy friends. And it can be hard if you're the only one in the group trying to get healthy, which brings us to the next C, which can, for some people is the deal breaker and can be the most important, which is community. So many people who just, this, I don't want to say fail, I hate that word, but they this is where they have the biggest struggle, is because their community is not adapting health promoting habits, and they want to feel connected to a group. It's natural and normal. We came from, you know, we're like, came from tribes of, in evolutionary, you know, times. We live in these small groups, and then we lived in families, and people don't want to feel different. You know, no man is an island. And so while it's difficult for most people to just get rid of all their current friends and family and spouses and children if they don't want to get healthy with them, what I would suggest is find new people that you can connect with, that you can resonate with, that can help you with your healthy lifestyle. And it's so easy now through Facebook and meetup groups, things that are completely free, where you can meet like-minded people and form connections that will support you. Because again, when you have support and when you have accountability, it's just so much easier. That's why I created my program, because we're connected and we don't have to feel, like you say, shame and blame or isolated and alone for maybe eating differently or for wanting to be healthy in a world that's not really designed to support health much anymore, you know? So community.
Well, what about really commitment? There's another C.
That was the first C. Remember, that was the first C. I think everything comes from a commitment, because I think when you commit, it makes it much harder to quit. And that's why I tell people, make your commitment public. You know, there was a guy, his name is Bobby Anderson. They called him the plant fuel trucker. And he was very overweight. He was a big rig trucker driving, you know, 20 hours a day. And every lifestyle disease you can imagine. And he decided to start posting his meals on Facebook for accountability. He had an Instant Pot, a pressure cooker, because trucks have things. Lost weight, reversed his diseases. And the fact that he made the commitment public that he was doing this and got all these followers, it really helped him to succeed. So yeah, commitment first. Because without a commitment or a weak commitment, you're probably not going to do it. And, you know, if some people are scared, you know, if commitments don't have to be forever, but you can say, you know, for the next 21 days, I commit to, you know, going for a walk 20 minutes a day, or I commit to eating an extra serving of vegetables. I mean, it doesn't have to be this huge, monumental commitment that, you know, and you are allowed to amend it, by the way. But I think making, you know, most people do New Year's resolutions, you know, on January 1st, and then by Martin Luther King Day, they're completely off the program. So I think a commitment is even stronger than a resolution. And that's why.
Well, I mean, group, yeah. Well, here's another C that just sent me. I love it, love it, love it. Compassion. Tell us about compassion, why it's so important.
Well, because if you don't have compassion for yourself, and you beat yourself up because of, quote, your moral failure, which, by the way, overweight, obesity, these are not moral failures. But a lot of people believe they are, and they beat themselves up. You have to have compassion for yourself and your journey. And like you say, it is hard. Listen, if it wasn't hard, we wouldn't have 70% of the population overweight or obese. It's really hard. But just because it's hard doesn't mean it's not doable once you have the right tools. But you have to have compassion for yourself and also for other people, because a lot of times when you get healthy and they stay unhealthy, sometimes we develop a little bit of an air of superiority, like, well, I did this, why can't you do this? So you have to have compassion in all things, you know. And, I mean, the Dalai Lama said it best. I'm trying to remember the quote, and I actually have it in the book, so I will look it up. But it is very important, because this is hard. And if you're beating yourself up, it's only going to be harder. Let me find that. Where is that quote? You think I remember this, because after all, I did write the book. This is compassion. You know, something if you... Well, anyway, keep talking and I'll find the quote, because it's a really good one.
You're so funny.
Well,
you know, it's not just, you know, the way I look at compassion, I really look at self-compassion as a monster. I think it's really, you know, cool that so many people can be compassionate for others. But I find that self-compassion is all but non-existent. Because people don't feel almost like deserving of it. It's quite mm-hmm. fascinating. And I'm saying to myself, well, that's crazy. You know, of course you're deserving of it. But, you know, people have this block, especially women, because they feel as though they feel somewhat selfish, that instead of feeling compassionate about themselves, they should be doing that, be of service to others at all times, 24/7, without realizing that, you know, they actually, and I quote, deserve a little bit of that for themselves. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. It's so important for women and everyone to have compassion. And I don't know why we don't, honestly. Maybe you have an idea of why that is. But it really, it's the most important thing in the world. And it is, so, like you say, it's easy to have it for somebody in need, a child, an animal, but we don't have it for ourselves. And I think we have to have the love and the compassion for ourselves first, and then it flows out from us, right? You know what I mean? Then having it out, just outward. And, you know, self-care is healthcare. And, you know, they use this analogy all the time, but it's such a good one. I fly every week, and they always say, if we experience a drop in cabin pressure, you know, a mask will pop down and put it on your face before you put it on your child's face. And that's what we have to do. It's not selfish. It's actually not selfish at all to take care of yourself first. You know, women tend to be people pleasers and doing for so many others. And then I think that's how we often wind up overweight. So sometimes that's the only way we do nurture ourselves, is with food. So put your oxygen mask down first, because you know what? You can't give from an empty cup.
Excellent. 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 Yeah. And excellent. Okay. So I'm totally loving this. So when someone is approaching this and they've, you know, been eating crap forever, how do you wean them on to, especially, something that may seem radical to them, which is a plant-based diet?
Well, again, I would say that instead of thinking, well, I have to be on a plant-based diet, I would say think about being more plant-centric. And so however that is right now, however amount of vegetables you're eating and fruit right now, and a lot of times, believe it or not, people are eating none. And you know what's really interesting is when it comes to weight loss, they did a study at Tufts, and they found that the people that ate the most fruits and vegetables a day had the lowest body weight and BMI. So just look for ways to eat more fruits and vegetables first. And for some people, that's having a smoothie in the morning, because a lot of people, you know, I eat vegetables for breakfast, roasted or steamed or air fried, and I love them. They do that in many countries throughout the world where they have savory breakfast and food vegetables. But a lot of people, if they're having an Egg McMuffin or a Cinnabon, they're like, I'm not going to eat that. But maybe you could have a green smoothie with a little bit of greens and some sweet fruit. So try to incorporate more fruits and vegetables in your diet. If you're eating no vegetables, how about just starting every meal with a salad? That's following calorie density by having some calorie dilute food first. So it's hard for people to feel like they're giving everything up. So what about adding most people like fruit. Fruit's delicious. You know, there's machines now you can get for $50 called the Yonanas machine, where you can take frozen bananas and nothing else in it and put it in, you make ice cream. These are things that people like. So find ways to incorporate more fruits and vegetables deliciously in your diet. If you hate vegetables, I did too, guys. I didn't eat them for 43 years. But there are ways to cook them, like roasting them, which caramelizes them and brings out the sweetness. I roast Brussels sprouts now in balsamic vinegar and Dijon mustard. It tastes like candy. So find some ways that you can enjoy vegetables, whether it's a smoothie, whether it's a juice. Smoothies are better because, you know what, we didn't talk about fiber, by the way. And again, this is so important, especially for people that binge or that are wanting to lose weight. The biggest problem, there are problems with animal products and processed food, but one of the biggest problems is they lack fiber. And fiber is important to every bodily process. It flushes out toxins and cholesterol. And the thing is fiber tricks the brain into thinking you're full, which is why I recommend smoothies over juices. And if everything you eat has fiber in it and water intact, fiber plus water together creates what's known as bulk. And bulk is what creates satiety, which is why it's better to eat your food whole than it is to drink the calories. Liquid calories don't have satiety. But if you want to do a smoothie, so much better than a juice, because in a juice, the pulp and the fiber's been removed. So again, it's not about animal products and processed food being evil. It's just they don't have fiber. And so you're not going to feel full on them. And so that's just like a little secret right there. It's just make sure that everything you eat has fiber. And so the thing is bring in more plants and then look at your diet. You know, I have a really cool quiz at the introduction of my book about whether or not you're a food addict. And by food addiction, I mean refined food addict, because You can't be addicted to food and eating. That's not possible. But you can be addicted to particular foods. And for most people, these are foods that contain flour and sugar. And while some people can eat a little bread and pasta and be fine, or drink a glass of wine, or have a cookie, there are people for who these need to be non-negotiable. And so this is the maybe the hardest part, because if you can often get people to incorporate more healthy foods, but to get people to abstain, especially permanently, from the foods that are addictive for them, that can be very difficult, and that can take some period of discomfort, detoxification, and withdrawal. And this is something that a lot of people aren't willing to go through, you know, to get to the other side of health and fitness.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You know what? One of the things I also enjoyed in your book was, you know, you had this one lovely little area chapter at the end of your book, which said a few of my favorite things, equipment and product list. I found that to be very helpful, just to hear what really works for you. Give us two of your most favorite ones.
Okay. So my favorite is the Instant Pot Electric Pressure Cooker. There's a, and actually most of my products have discount codes that I was able to get for people. So I love that because it can get healthy food on the table fast. I can cook beans in 10 minutes. I can cook, like right now before we got on this call, I put in ingredients for tonight's dinner, black bean, mushroom, chili. 6 minutes, dinner's going to be made. So I really, really love the Instant Pot Electric Pressure Cooker. It comes in different sizes. If you're a college student, you can get the 3-quart for your dorm room. It's absolutely incredible. So that's one of my very favorite things. Let's see what my other favorite things. Well, lately I've really been enjoying the, I don't even know if I have this in my favorite things, so I don't know if I should talk about it, but I really enjoy the air fryer, because one of the secrets to ultimate weight loss and health is to eat foods of a low caloric density. And oil is the most calorically dense food on the planet. It's 4,000 calories a pound, which means it's 40 times calorically dense as vegetables at 100 calories a pound. So, like, for example, you know, an ounce of zucchini is 4 calories. An ounce of nuts is 200 calories, 50 times as calorically dense. Well, with an air fryer, I can make things like crispy French fries in 20 minutes without oil. Salt is optional if you use it or not. And it's just a wonderful machine. And it's great for vegetables. Oh, for people that don't like vegetables, you put your mushrooms or your cauliflower in the air fryer, and boy, it's a game changer. So I would say that right now, those are the machines I use every day, and I really love them, and they make food delicious and healthy.
Awesome. I think that that is fantastic. So where can people learn more about your wonderful work?
Well, thank you. My website is Eat Unprocessed, name of my first book, eatunprocessed.com. But honestly, if they Google Chef AJ, they'd probably get everything about me they'd ever want to know. They can watch the 13 episodes of Healthy Living with Chef AJ. I do in-person conferences once a year in Las Vegas in September. And I do, actually, if they follow me on Facebook or YouTube, I do weekly broadcasts, which I'd love to have you on live sometime. I do live interviews of wonderful people such as yourself. And I'm always posting a recipe, pretty much every week, a recipe from my book, so they can watch that. So Chef AJ on YouTube and Facebook, Instagram and Twitter is The Real Chef AJ. And if they want to sign up to be on my mailing list at eatunprocessed.com, we'll send you 6 of my favorite recipes, including the black bean mushroom chili, which I just mentioned.
Oh my gosh. So many ways to reach out and grab you. That's all I wanted to make sure everyone knew, that you are accessible and that, you know, you really talk people's language at their level, meaning that without overcomplicating it and making it nuts, you know, you're very, very accessible, welcoming, inviting, no matter what level you are, whether you're somebody who can really cook your way around the kitchen or somebody who can't turn on a microwave. And that's perfectly fine. No problems whatsoever. You know, today we've been talking to our one and only Chef AJ, and she has a brand new book out. Yeah, The Secrets to Ultimate Weight Loss. And then as well, her other book, Unprocessed, How to Achieve Vibrant Health and Your Ideal Weight. And again, her website is eatunprocessed.com. Chef AJ, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. And I really appreciate you endorsing my book and your work as well. I love following you on Facebook. You post the most.
Hey, listen, it takes a team, girlfriend. You know that.
Absolutely. I hope we get to
We make it work. Oh my gosh. Yeah. We love teams. And listen, everybody out there, take a minute to hit iTunes right now. rate and review this show because I'm just loving it. And I know you're going to have some great comments as well. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Herb Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Herb Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today and stay well.